One thing that I found really interesting when I was getting ready for this interview is I realized that you and Pierre Poilievre were first elected to Parliament in the same year, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've been in Parliament with him for 20-some years.
Yeah. Do you have any personal stories about him that stand out to you from over those decades?
Yeah. You know, the media always, when he became leader, they're saying, oh, tell us one funny story or one likable story. It's like, yeah, I don't got any. honest, <Man. laughs> I'm not being mean, but I just don't have any. I've been there with him for 20-some years. What strikes me is he's kind of like a political arsonist. He's really, really good at setting the house on fire.
I'm Rachel Gilmore, your least favorite person's least favorite journalist. Welcome to Bubble Pop, a weekly show where we break down the biggest headlines so you don't have to doom scroll. Then we'll dig deeper into something juicy that you should know about. Today we've got NDP Member of Parliament Charlie Angus on the show. He's the man who sponsored that viral petition to revoke Elon Musk's citizenship, and he's just getting started. Charlie is going to give us some behind-the-scenes tea on international and domestic politics because, fun fact, he and Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre were elected to Parliament in the same year, more than two decades ago. But first, the news. Last week, I said Trump took a blowtorch to the international rules-based order. Well, this week, he stomped on the ashes. Germany fought off its far-right party while American conservatives spent their week throwing Nazi salutes. Jeff Bezos in the White House took a steaming dump on press freedom. Measles is back in the U.S. and Canada, despite being previously declared eradicated in both countries. Make America healthy again, am I right? The liberals just pulled ahead of the conservatives in an Ipsos poll for the first time since 2021, as the leadership race heated up with two debates. Over in the provinces, Danielle Smith continues to be dogged by a private healthcare spending scandal. And Ontario chose its premier this week. A lot going on, and I don't want you to have to be here all day, unless, of course, you want to be, so let's hop to it. There is a wild amount of news to get through this week, so we're going to start international and work our way closer to home. This week marked the third anniversary of Russia's war in Ukraine, and to mark the moment, the UN held a vote to condemn it. But the US sent shockwaves through the international community when it voted against a Ukrainian and European-backed resolution, instead siding with states like Russia, North Korea, and Belarus in voting against it. The US also introduced a resolution of its own, which did not call Russia the aggressor in the war, even though it unequivocally was, and it didn't acknowledge Ukraine's territorial integrity. It's all part of a terrifying vibe shift where Trump seems more interested in embracing Russia than in defending long-standing alliances and, frankly, the very notion that states should respect one another's territorial integrity. He's even gone so far as to engage in talks with Russia while icing out Ukraine, as we chatted about last week. And as a result of this, Ukraine scrambled to find a way to keep the U.S. supportive of its attempts to keep Russia from unjustly stealing Ukrainian territory and attacking its people, including working on a deal to give the U.S. access to Ukrainian critical minerals, and Zelensky has offered to resign in exchange for NATO membership. Meanwhile, the Europeans have launched a charm offensive to try to salvage what remains of the long-standing alliance between their nations and the USA. French President Emmanuel Macron and UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer both visited the White House this week, and as if all but abandoning Ukraine and blowing up long-standing alliances isn't enough damage on an international scale, Trump also posted a genuinely horrifying AI-generated video to Truth Social this week. As a song with lyrics like, quote, "No more tunnels, no more fear, Trump Gaza is finally here" plays, it shows Gaza transformed into a resort with money raining on kids, gold statues of Trump, Elon Musk eating at restaurants, and Trump sipping a drink shirtless on a beach with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in front of a sign that reads Trump Gaza. It's a disgusting depiction of a Trumpian end vision for an ethnically cleansed Gaza, which has been facing what Amnesty International and the UN have called a genocide. It's just so deeply disturbing and devoid of conscience. Speaking of disturbing, the Tate brothers just landed in the United States after the travel ban keeping them in Romania was lifted. The two manosphere influencers and thumbs in human form faced charges in Romania of rape, trafficking minors, and money laundering, which they deny. They also face separate, unrelated charges of rape and human trafficking in the UK. At the time that I'm filming this, it's unclear why exactly they were allowed to travel and what's next for their legal cases, but we do know three three things. They're avid Trump supporters. U.S. officials reportedly asked for their travel restrictions to be relaxed earlier this month. And a U.S. special envoy raised the issue of these dumbass brothers at the Munich Security Conference. Speaking of Munich, let's turn to Germany now, where there's some semi-good news, depending on how you look at it. It's really a glass half full, half empty situation. Because the German election took place on Sunday, and despite Elon Musk's best efforts, the far-right party AfD didn't win. Instead, a center-right alliance came out on top. But the virulently Islamophobic AfD did have their best showing ever, coming in second with just 20% of the vote. The winner can't govern alone and will have to decide who to team up with to form government. But luckily, the winning center-right alliance's leader has promised he wouldn't team up with the far-right AfD, likening it to selling the soul of his party. So, provided he keeps that promise, Germany's far-right threat is still being slightly kept at bay. But elsewhere in the world, the far right is becoming increasingly unshackled. At the Conservative Political Action Conference, or CPAC, 1 week ago, former Trump advisor and current host of a terrible far right broadcast, Steve Bannon, made a Nazi salute on stage. He denies it was a Nazi salute, of course. But this comes after Musk did the same salute twice on stage as he celebrated Trump's inauguration. Oh, and the same day Bannon did it at CPAC, a producer of the movie Sound of Freedom also did a Nazi salute on that same stage, saying his heart goes out to all of you, the same thing Elon said. Really great. They're definitely the good guys here, right? Let's turn our attention to a different kind of supervillain in this timeline, Jeff Bezos, who took a massive dump on press freedom at the Washington Post this week when the billionaire owner of the newspaper decided to throw his weight around on editorial decisions, which is really problematic in its own right. But he specifically said their opinion section will now be writing every day in support of two pillars, personal liberties and free markets. Now, why do I have a feeling that this won't include personal liberties of, say, trans folks? He even had the gall to say that pro-liberty, pro-free market voices are viewpoints that are currently underserved in the market of ideas and news opinion. Jesus Christ. Anyways, as if that wasn't enough, the White House also set press freedom on fire this week, announcing that the journalists who get to cover the White House will now be picked by the White House. They even had the gall to say that this was them giving the power back to the people. Which, like, if that's not a perfect example of doublespeak, I don't know what is. Ignorance is strength, war is peace, freedom is slavery, and the people are the government. Cool. Speaking of the people, measles is back. Great job, everyone. That disease, which was declared eradicated in the US in the year 2000 and in Canada in 1998, has been surging around the world. To put this uptick in perspective, last year Canada had a total of 146 cases. And as of February of this year, we've already had 95 cases. Meanwhile, the US just had its first reported measles death in a decade this week, when an unvaccinated child in Texas died of the disease. There is no cure for measles, which is why it's so important to get vaccinated. Unfortunately, despite vaccines being incredibly safe and a miracle of modern medicine, the anti-vaccine movement has been rising and now kids are paying the price. But don't worry, the US's new top health official is weighing in to keep us all calm. Just kidding, it's RFK Jr. So of course he said the Texas outbreak is, quote, not unusual. The disease was eradicated in the US within my lifetime, Bobby, and the first child just died of the disease in a decade. This is unusual. And one last awful thing to mention from the Trump administration, the Pentagon just announced that the trans folks who have dedicated their lives to serving in the US military will be removed for no other reason than the fact that they are trans, which is disgusting, cruel, and evil. It's an act of discrimination. Trans people have always been here and they always will be. Anyways, let's focus on domestic politics for the rest of this because otherwise I'm not sure my blood pressure can handle it. quick update on the big scandal in Alberta, you know, the one where the former head of Alberta Health Services filed a wrongful dismissal lawsuit against the province, alleging she was fired after she looked into government interference in multi-million dollar contracts. Yeah, well, documents from Alberta Health Services, which Alberta Premier Danielle Smith disputes, show the private surgical company at the center of the scandal was billing Albertans more than twice as much as the same procedure would cost them at a public hospital. For-profit healthcare is such a scourge. Anyways, the latest development here is that Alberta's infrastructure minister just resigned from cabinet over concerns he had with the government's, quote, procurement practices across all departments. Procurement just means goods and services that the government buys. So yeah, not a great look for Smith's government in the middle of an alleged corruption scandal. Meanwhile, on the federal stage, the Liberals held their leadership debates this week, and they were incredibly boring. Karina Gold gave a standout performance, but she's unlikely to win. Meanwhile, Mark Carney was fine, although his French was brutal. So brutal that he actually had a really notable flub when he accidentally said he supports Hamas, which obviously he doesn't, and he clarified later that he does not. And Freeland did well, but not well enough to upset Carney's lead. Although she is nipping at his heels, so we'll see what happens when the results roll in on March 9th. But either way, the Liberals are probably feeling pretty good, because after Pierre Poilievre's Conservatives have dominated the polls for a while now, a new Ipsos poll just showed the Liberals have pulled ahead of the Conservatives for the first time since 2021. So we'll see if that momentum continues, or if it's just a fleeting boost thanks to the Liberal leadership race, Trudeau's resignation, and the burst of patriotism Canada is feeling amid Trump's 51st state threats. Only time will tell. And that's if our country even, you know, still exists, because just when I thought I had gotten through most of the news for the week, I saw that a top White House official is now threatening to redraw the Canadian borders. So, yeah. And on a related note, the CBC also made everyone very, very angry this week by exploring this idea with the question, quote, what does Canada as the 51st state mean to you? Which seems to be built on a premise of absolutely brain-rotted amounts of both sides-ism. So when everyone was furious, CBC ended up responding to viewers by reframing the question as, quote, what do you think of Trump's comments about Canada becoming the 51st state? And the host, Ian Hannah-Mansing, promised to do the show with care. Then they invited Kevin O'Leary on for the segment, so take from that what you will. Meanwhile, Trump's 25% tariff on most Canadian goods is supposed to come into effect on Tuesday. So that's going to be fun if he doesn't change his mind again, which is entirely possible. And the last thing to mention, Ontario had an election on Thursday, and the province decided that Premier Doug Ford, despite things like the Greenbelt scandal, gets to retain his majority government. That's the news for this week. Hopefully next week won't be quite as long. This was a really long one, but that might be wishful thinking. We'll see. After the break, we'll be chatting with NDP MP Charlie Angus about the petition to revoke Elon Musk's citizenship. He's not running for re-election after 20 years in office, so expect some tea to be spilled. We'll be right back. Sometimes when politicians decide they're not running for re-election, they get even more brutally honest about the issues they care about. Like when Newfoundland and Labrador Premier Andrew Furey, who was recently in Washington dealing with Trump administration officials, announced his plans this week not to run again. He basically immediately turned around and called U.S. President Donald Trump, quote, cracked. Take a listen.
I mean, it's clear, right? Like, the guy's cracked. I mean, maybe I can speak more freely now, but like he wakes up one morning and says something, water, curse, tomorrow it's going to be on tuna, who knows, you know, like it's just, that's how erratic and confusing it is.
Now, if Fury was unshackled in that clip, then NDP MP Charlie Angus took his shackles, ripped them apart, and set them on fire. It is, frankly, refreshing. He's gone on CNN and called MAGA morons. He's a regular on Midas Touch these days, where he also doesn't pull any punches about Trump. He's the sponsor of a petition that made international headlines and amassed hundreds of thousands of signatures from Canadians calling for Elon Musk's Canadian citizenship to be revoked. But Charlie has never been one to sit on his hands domestically either. Before setting his sights on Trump, he was already outspoken about Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre, calling him stuff like unfit for public office and a, quote, liar. That refreshing level of candor is why I am so excited to welcome NDP MP Charlie Angus on the show today. Charlie, welcome to Bubble Pop.
Thanks so much for having me on. Thank you.
Well, thanks for taking the time. It really feels like you're everywhere in the news these days, in no small part due to the way that you call out Elon Musk and Donald Trump. So tell me, what was the moment that you decided you needed to sort of take on this role and defend Canada?
I went to bed the night of the election. I didn't want to see the result. I knew what was going down. Most of my friends and some American friends who were with us were in denial, and Florida hadn't come in, and Pennsylvania was going to flip, but I knew it was going to go down. And it's really pretty straightforward. I woke up in the morning like it felt like the worst hangover of my life. And my wife, who I've been with since I've been 19 years old, was already on the phone, and she said, "You haven't said anything yet. Why haven't you spoken publicly?" And I said, "I have no idea what to say." And she says, "It doesn't matter. People need to hear a voice right now." And that was a moment that literally changed everything for me, because I knew what we were dealing with. This is not just, oh, the Democrats lost it in 2 years. It's all going to come back. This isn't an aberration. This is a fundamental threat. We are going into a new dark age if we sit back. And so at that moment, I just decided it's time to step up. It's time to be a voice. I certainly didn't think I was going to be a voice internationally, but what strikes me is that ordinary Canadians are way out front of their political leaders. Ordinary Canadians understand the threat that we're facing. I think a lot of Americans who have been watching the nightmare unfold understand, and they're looking for any voice to speak up. So here's a guy, the MP for Timmins James Bay in Northern Ontario, suddenly getting attention. Well, I'm just calling out fascism and tyranny and saying it very clearly and explaining what we're up against and what we need to do to defend democracy and defend our values in this time of monsters.
Yeah, and it is really refreshing, because I think that it almost feels like there's this normalcy bias, and it's among both media and politicians, where people want things to be normal so they act like it is, but it really doesn't feel like it. I mean, you've been in the rooms with these people, and you were just recently in Brussels at the NATO parliamentary meetings, and a lot of people there had just been at the Munich Security Conference, where J.D. Vance shocked the world with that speech. Could you tell us about the energy in that room? Did it feel normal to you?
It felt absolutely surreal to be at the NATO conference right after J.D. Vance tried to blow Western democracy apart. There was a big delegation of ugly Americans. There were some nice Democrats who looked shell-shocked, but the Republican, I call them the MAGA morons, were there. And everybody was tiptoeing around them. And I thought, this is BS. This is a government that says we don't have a right to exist as a nation, and we're all just going to tiptoe around. So I stood up in the very first morning session. What started it was that someone from NATO said that, I think kissing the ring to the Americans, oh, Canada's going to have to pull its weight. And I got up and I said, pull our weight. I got family down the road lying in a field. We freed you from the Nazis. You tell us that we don't pull our weight. Canadians have suffered and died all over the world for freedom, and we're not going to be pushed around here. And then I went right at the American delegation for threatening our nation. And still, the major European countries were tiptoeing around, hoping it was all going to go back to normal. There is no normal to go back to. And what really struck me was it's staring us in the face. Donald can't make it any plainer. And we actually have to get a game plan. And that's where I believe ordinary Canadians understand it, but our political class is still hoping that, we'll be nice and, oh, it's just Donald. It's not. This is fascist tyranny that's threatening democracy around the world.
Yeah, and I've noticed that in addition to calling this out publicly, you have been pulling some parliamentary levers, maybe some of them more symbolic. And, an obvious huge example of that has been the parliamentary e-petitions. One is calling to revoke Musk's citizenship, and another is looking to refuse Trump entry to Canada until he stops threatening us. Obviously, especially with the citizenship one, it can't really legally be done. So can you tell me a bit about what the goal is with these petitions?
Well, again, with the great thing about Canadian democracy is people can put a petition together about anything. Road safety, hospital wait times. Sometimes a petition gets 500 signatures, sometimes 1,000, sometimes 10,000. I agreed on the one on citizenship. I mean, a petition cannot take someone's citizenship away, but a petition can send a message. My main focus at the time was I've been really pushing Elections Canada to get serious about the X platform and its ability to interfere in our election, and I have not had a credible answer from Elections Canada. So I've been really focused on that. So I agreed to support the petition, and the next thing I know, I don't know, we're coming in on 300,000, or we passed the 300,000 mark. We will probably be the largest petition in Canadian history. And again, it speaks to the anger in Canadians. You know, we're nice people, but we have a deep-seated hatred of fascism and extremism. I don't know, call it the Juno Beach gene. It's embedded in our DNA. So when we see someone like Elon Musk undermining the German elections, supporting the far right, saying that we're not even a real country, and doing a Nazi salute, Canadians are thinking, hell no, that guy should have nothing to do with this. And so it's sending a message to people like Doug Ford, who signed the Starlink agreement. It's sending a message to Ottawa that we do not want to have any tuck at all with this man, because he is a fundamental threat to democracy and a fundamental threat to the Canadian way of life. And this guy should never be able to pretend he's got anything Canadian in him at all.
Totally. And you know, if there's anyone who understands how Canadian democracy works, you're certainly among them. You've been in politics for more than 20 years now, so you've seen some shit.
I've seen it all. Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously things internationally have changed very quickly, especially in recent weeks, but we've seen some shifts domestically too. So I was curious about what your takeaways have been and what your impression has been about how politics have changed over the last two decades.
We've seen a real, certainly you pointed out that I've been outspoken on Pierre Poilievre. Yeah. I do not believe this man is fit for public office. I think the dumbing down and the viciousness and the hate politics that have been generated, the death threats, the intimidation, the pitchfork politics that's moves from online platforms to real life threats against people that has made good people decide not to run. But I think the real threat that's posed by Poilievre is reducing the complexities of the world we're living into these dumbass slogans. We are facing really, really profound challenges environmentally, economically, and now geopolitically. And having some jerk throw out these slogans that his MPs mindlessly chant, to me, is a threat to democracy. The fact that our parliament wasn't able to work for some months because they shut everything down to prove that they, in their ideas, that Canada's broken. This is the MAGA playbook. And I'm as partisan as it gets. You talk to anybody who's been on the wrong side of me on an issue on government accountability, they'll say I don't always play nice. I don't go to play nice. I don't go to sit and be nice. It's not some club I joined. You know, everybody's supposed to be polite. I'm not there for that. I'm there to get something done. But when I see the open undermining of the system that we have and the open undermining and threats that are being brought forward by the Conservative bench to intimidate their way into power, I call that out because, you know, it's not going to be me there in the future. It'll be someone else. And anybody who's there is sent there by the Canadian people, have a right to speak, and should put Canada first and not whatever their party war room tells them.
Yeah. Honestly, it was something that even I noticed in my 7 years in the parliamentary press gallery. When I first started out, it felt like there was at least more room for the Conservatives weren't quite as slogany. There was more diversity of thought within their caucus, and they've really kind of all cemented around, you know, these talking points and these, it feels very gimmicky. And yeah, I guess I'm curious, like, do you feel as though the Conservatives under Poilievre are ideologically still what the Conservative Party initially seemed to represent?
Well, I mean, I've worked with many great Conservatives over the years. You know, when we did our investigation into Facebook and Cambridge Analytica and the undermining of people's privacy and potential electoral interference in 2019, you know, I worked with Peter Kent, a Conservative. Peter and I probably didn't agree on a lot of things, but we worked across party lines because we understood the threat to Canada was greater than our partisan nature. What worries me with the Conservative Party is that those who are thoughtful sit on the back bench. Those who are willing to push conspiracy and nutter hate politics sit on the front bench. That's not a healthy sign. But I think I've always felt that when push comes to shove, it would start to fall apart for Mr. Polyev because he's fundamentally an unlikable person. He hasn't grown. He hasn't matured. He's shown no leadership other than being a very, very vicious and thin-skinned dude. And I don't think that's Canada. So I've been sort of anticipating the drop in numbers for some time. I think the numbers are going to drop further before the election.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were surprised to have been following Polyev for a while by the attempted rebrand of him as like this cool dude when that certainly wasn't his reputation on the Hill anyways.
No, and you know, again, like Aaron O'Toole, like I had lunch with him the other day. Like,
yeah.
Aaron, to me, him, we don't agree on much, but he works with veterans. I was asked to go to a luncheon because he helps veterans, and I thought, here's a man who serves his country. He deserves the respect of serving his country, and he's only been shown absolute disrespect from his own party for trying to raise the tone of politics, which is, you know, again, like, I don't mind going into the corners and dropping gloves and going over the boards and all the hockey metaphors, but there has to be a respect for the notion of democracy and the notion of ideas, and the difference between truth and falsehood has to be a fundamental.
Yeah, well, you can't debate shared ideas, or you can't debate ideas if you don't have a shared reality, right? So it's just kind of creating an entire crisis within the very idea of being able to discuss the future of our democracy. Aaron O'Toole, I remember he came up to me at a press gallery dinner once and even said, I'm really sorry about all the threats that you've dealt with for your journalism. And I thought that was really great. And it's quite a stark contrast when you consider that Pierre Polyev has literally put out press releases and regularly attacks journalists. So it's a real shift. And one thing that I found really interesting when I was getting ready for this interview was I realized that you and Pierre Polyev were first elected to Parliament in the same year, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've been in Parliament with him for 20-some years.
Yeah. Do you have any personal stories about him that stand out to you from over those decades?
Yeah. You know, the media always, when he became leader, they're saying, oh, tell us one funny story or one likable story. It's like, Yeah, I don't got any. honest,
<Man. laughs>
I'm not being mean, but I just don't have any. I've been there with him for 20-some years. What strikes me is he's kind of like a political arsonist. He's really, really good at setting the house on fire. And I've been on committees where Polyev has been on the Conservative side. I've been on the NDP side. We've been going after government mismanagement or misspending. And there was a time when I thought he must really know something because he's really going at it hard. And then I realized he actually wasn't going after documents or proof. He was just setting the house on fire. Then he'd get bored, set another house on fire, and set another house on fire. For me, if I go after governments because I think something's wrong, and if I find that something isn't wrong, then I will say that. But that's what accountability is. But I think the one thing that's really important to point out now is I think there's this shift because of Trump, because of the threat to our democracy. I've suddenly seen a real different tone in the way Canadians are relating to each other, region to region, a sense of solidarity that I haven't seen that really gives me hope. So I'm feeling very hopeful about Canada right now because we see the chaos in the United States and they're a very divided country. I don't find that Canada is divided right now. I think people know what the threat is. They know it in their hearts and in their guts, that this is a threat about our nation and our values are different, and our values are about inclusivity. So I think for all the rage politics that dominated us over the last few years, suddenly there's a light in this, there's a break in the storm, even though the storm's coming at us really hard from Washington. So I'm taking a lot of hope from that.
I'm kind of curious because obviously a lot of this happened, I think, after your decision to announce not to run for re-election. Has any of this made you reconsider that?
No. I mean, I've been 21 years. My riding's bigger than the United Kingdom. They decided to throw an extra 20,000 square kilometers, hundreds of extra highway miles, at least a dozen new towns that I've never been in before. And I love democracy, but I don't love it that much that, I mean, I would never be home. I'm never home anyways, but I wouldn't be able to do the work I'm doing right now because I'd be at every little Legion dinner. I'd be at, you know, driving the highways endlessly where there's no phone coverage. And I really believe the fight's for Canada. I'm not walking away from politics. The idea, like me sitting on a beach or going golfing. I mean, in what universe could anybody picture that? I don't even wear shorts, you know, even on a hot summer day, my kids would kill me if I did. So I think the work's the work goes on. And, you know, I've started this Charlie Angus, The Resistance, through Substack, and it's we're starting to build a team, and we're looking at how to do politics in a different way that's much more activist and much more calling out what needs to be called out. So I'm feeling I'm in the right spot right now.
So no reattempt at the leadership for the NDP anytime soon?
You know, they always say if you don't want to see how sausages are made, stay out of the kitchen. So I got up pretty close in the NDP kitchen and watched the sausages get made. So coming in second was good enough for me.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you're a bit busy. You got a punk band. You got a lot of other stuff going on. So
the band is back on the road. Yeah. So we got a new album we're working on. So you know, and I want to fight. I want to fight for Canada. So Canada's my full time job right now.
Can you tell me a little bit about this new push that you have with respect to Amazon and, you know, buying Canadian? It seems like you're really at the forefront of this movement now.
Well, okay, so here's the thing. This whole boycott movement started grassroots. I've been seen as the front face of it just because I've been speaking up. This is what ordinary Canadians have been doing. So they're launching this February 28th boycott of all things big and American. And so right now what a lot of Canadians aren't aware of is that, you know, Amazon fired all their workers in Quebec and shut their plants down to break the union. Here's Jeff Bezos, a rotten, crappy oligarch who doesn't believe that Canadian workers should have the proper pay and the safety conditions, and so he shut the plant down. So there's a boycott in Quebec, but I think all of Canada can come together. February 28th is supposed to be the day of a big boycott. Well, let's make a permanent national boycott of all things Amazon, all things Jeff Bezos, all things American oligarchy, because they are not our friends and they are a threat to our democracy. So we're launching this campaign to promote, buy anything, buy it wherever you get it, I don't care, just do not give Amazon another dime.
Do you have any concerns about the sort of rising Canadian broligarchy that we've seen? I mean, the Shopify bros have been echoing a lot of Elon Musk's talking points, saying Tobias Lütke saying that we need a Doge here. And they also launched this Build Canada campaign to literally spell out legislation for lawmakers. What, do you have concerns internally, like domestically, that we could follow in the U.S.'s footsteps there?
I have deep concerns. We certainly see the big oil is trying to make the most of the crisis, telling us we just bought them a $34 billion pipeline, and we're spending at least 50 cents on every dollar to get their rotten bitumen down because it's not refined. It's the heaviest GHG emissions product on the planet, and we're subsidizing it. Now they want us to build another pipeline, and it's supposed to be for national unity while they're making record profits. We see the Business Council pushing the austerity buttons. So yeah, we can't trust these companies and the tech bros. I think there's going to be a moment of reckoning with them, but right now we're focused on Trump. But I think Canadians have to watch out for those wolves in Canadian hockey jerseys who would eat our young to make a buck and to sell us out.
If Canadians take one thing away from this conversation today, or there's one thing you want them to think about with respect to their democracy going forward, what would you want that to be?
I think it's really important to understand that nobody is coming to save us. We are in a very dark and dangerous moment, a moment that I never thought I'd see in my lifetime. But what gives me hope is that I think that by showing solidarity, by sticking together, Canadians can beat anything. We've beat the biggest foes before, and we'll do it again. As long as we hold strong to each other, I don't have a lot of faith in the political leadership, but I think I have a lot of faith in ordinary Canadians, and I think ordinary Canadians putting pressure on the political leadership to hold the line, to be strong, we will get through this. And I think we could be a shining example for the rest of the world if the incredible solidarity I'm seeing now stays true.
Well, that hopeful note feels like a good place to wrap things up. Charlie Angus, thank you so much. This has been a really great conversation. I love that you injected a little bit of hope too. That's always nice to hear. Thank you so much for your time and for joining us on Bubble Pop. And could you please tell the audience where to find you if they want to keep up with your efforts?
Charlie Angus, the Resistance Substack, is the main forum right now, and I'm on Blue Sky because, boy, getting off X was like, I don't know, waking up after drinking rot gut for like 8 months and suddenly feeling sober and feeling good. So my account is still there on X because I don't want some troll to take it, but I haven't been back. So Blue Sky, Charlie Angus 104, or Charlie Angus, the Resistance Substack.
Great. Thank you so much, Charlie, and hopefully we'll chat again soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Bubble Pop. I'm Rachel Gilmore, your least favorite person's least favorite journalist. If you enjoyed this episode, consider subscribing to Bubble Pop on YouTube, Patreon, Substack, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you like to listen. You can also find me on TikTok, Instagram, Twitch, and Blue Sky. I'd like to say a special thank you to Hans Vivian Wenzel for making the incredibly groovy music for Bubble Pop. You can find more of his stuff on Spotify under the artist name Hans, lowercase h with an exclamation mark. Thanks again for spending this time with me. Doing this for a living is a dream, and I could not do it without your support. So thank you for being here, and I'll see you next time.